Hi guys, Aaron Elijah here. Hey, on this week's episode, we're going to be talking about the internet-connected home. Rumor has it, come Monday at WWDC, Apple's going to be jumping in to the internet-connected home in a big way with a big iOS 8 announcement. We'll be talking about that a little bit later. And also, we have a brand new Cultcast second hour at the end of the show. Make sure you stay tuned for that. We'll be talking to a prolific YouTuber, Jonathan Mann. Jonathan has been writing one song a day, every day, for the last 5 years. He's written thousands of songs so far, and I want to find out how the heck do you write so many songs even when you're feeling uninspired? I had a really great conversation with Jonathan, plus there's a huge Apple twist. Stay tuned for Cultcast second hour. I want to thank Slingbox for sponsoring this episode of the Cultcast. Slingbox, the best way to watch your TV anywhere, whether you're at home or halfway around the world. Right on your laptop, tablet, or smartphone. Slingbox brings your cable set-top box, satellite receiver, or DVR. Frankly, your whole at-home TV experience right to your favorite mobile device, wherever you are in the world, and with no monthly fees. Only Slingbox delivers your live TV channels and your recorded shows right to your smartphone, tablet, or laptop, whether you're in the backyard or at a buddy's house or even on the road. And Slingbox has a special offer for our Cultcast listeners. Head on over to slingbox.com/cult and get $50 off plus free shipping on your brand new Slingbox. That's slingbox.com/cult. For $50 off and free shipping. I want to thank Slingbox for sponsoring this episode. Okay, now on to the show, y'all.
Welcome to the ChopperCast, the best 30-minute chopper conversation you're going to hear all week long.
Mr. Schwarzenegger, that's actually not what this podcast is about at all. It's actually about Apple.
That's what I meant to say. Give me another chance. Hello!
Okay. Oh, that was awesome. Keep going with that.
Hello and welcome to the Cultcast.
The best 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Airfront Elijah. That's a little Governor Schwarzenegger got on the mic there.
Like you had an Arnold stuck in your throat.
I had a Schwarzenegger in my throat. Joined today by one Mr. Buster Kine.
Hello.
Hey, Buster. Alex Celsius, Heath is here.
I'll get to the chopper.
And unfortunately, one Mr. Leander Caney is not here. He has a ribboning competition. And I think he's going to take the gold this time. He recovered from that groin injury that he had, and you guys should see him with a ribbon in his unitard. He's phenomenal, phenomenal dancer.
And hot.
He looks really good in that unitard. Okay, let's start the show, shall we, guys? So much great stuff to talk about today. WWDC is right around the corner. And some new information has kind of surfaced in regards to what we're expecting there. So we'll talk about that. And also, I thought we could talk about a little bit about Star Wars, if you guys would, later in the show, since we have talked about that a little bit here and there on the show. And this is really exciting. We haven't done one of these in a while. We're going to be doing an all-new Cultcast second hour at the end of the show. So if you guys have never heard that segment, it's where we talk to interesting people and get their story. This week, I'm going to be talking to Jonathan Mann. He is a popular YouTuber. You guys may recall the AntennaGate scandal, Buster, Alex.
Oh, yes.
And when Steve Jobs went on stage, he introduced a song that somebody had written about the whole AntennaGate scandal and played it during the keynote. Well, that song was Jonathan Mann's. And I thought that was interesting. But beyond that, this guy has been writing a song every single day, a brand new song every single day since 2009. I think he's on like 4,000, 1,000, some really high thousand number that I should be able to get to via multiplication in my head quickly, but I can't. So I'm going to be talking to him about what it was like having his song featured during that keynote, and then also where he gets his inspiration from. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be at the end of the show, Cultcast Second Hour with Jonathan Mann. I have one thing to say to you guys. Write the code. Change the world. Change the world. Make it a better place. So that's the slogan for WWDC 2014. The banners have gone up in Moscone. The event is Monday, by the way. I think the keynote starts at 10 a.m. sharp. All your favorite Apple executives will be there. Tim Cook will be on the stage, hopefully in large golden chains, joined by Dr. Dre. What do you guys think about the Write the Code, change the World slogan?
It's silly.
I gotta say, I don't get it. I don't get it. Any ideas on what this could possibly mean?
Well, have you seen Apple's U-verse ads that they've been putting out? Like, their ads,
they just put out two new ones, right?
They've gotten really, like, I don't want to say pie in the sky, but like really,
they are, yeah, very pie in the sky, man.
Yeah, like, they're
you
very
can
like
do phenomenal things with an iPhone. You will change
which
the
is kind of, I mean,
they show people doing some really cool stuff, yeah, you know. But I mean, let's be honest, you can do a lot of these things with, it's not necessarily the iPhone or the iPad, I think, that's
right.
So magical,
I think, man. Apple, I don't know. I think Apple likes highlighting people doing, like Buster said, amazing things with their products, and that's like what they want to encourage. So I could it kind of matches up with the marketing lingo that they've been using lately.
I guess I think you could do a lot of amazing things with iOS devices. I think those ads are really cool. I just, usually these invitations and these banners, when they have a message like this, they're very pointed and they mean something specific, and I just cannot imagine what they mean by this. Maybe they obviously have some big stuff in store for iOS 8.
Yeah, Nicole actually had a cool roundup of like the best and worst slogans, and I don't know, this one, it really doesn't give anything away as to like what they're doing, but none of the other ones really have either, like the center of the app universe and you've come to the right platform, stuff like that. They're usually pretty boring, but this one just seems so silly and like, I don't know.
Okay, well, here's an idea. So actually we were going to cover this later in the show, but since we're already talking about it. So one of the things that's been rumored to be launching at WWDC is an all new made for iHome platform, mm-hmm, that Apple is going to be building into iOS 8, and it's going to have an API so developers can write code so that the iPhone controls things in your internet enabled home. So your thermostat, your TV, your any other device that has this, you know, quote unquote, made for iHome license that Apple sells to them. So it's going to be like made for iPod license, similar to that, but that the iPhone and iOS 8 will be able to control a plethora of devices. So if you write the code, you could change the home.
Okay.
That's my theory.
Uh-huh.
And see, that could change the world because all these devices could come out. And I think this is actually really huge news if this ends up being true. And I think it's really exciting because we already have all these devices that are living in your home and they're all becoming internet enabled, like the Nest thermostat, the internet enabled
Hue lights.
Another good example.
And it's a pain to go through each individual app and like turn on your Hue lights or adjust your monitor and stuff like that. So like a API, it could even come with like a centralized place to control everything, like no matter what the brand or app.
Exactly. So, I mean, imagine if you, and we're definitely headed this direction. Imagine if you come home and your door unlocks because you have your iPhone in your pocket. It knows who you are. It unlocks a door. You walk in. And your lights adjust themselves to the levels that you like, and maybe even like the colors that you like. Your thermostat churns up the heat as soon as you pull into the driveway because it knows you're home and it knows someone's going to be coming into the house. So the heat churns on, and you know the sexy music plays on your in-home speaker system because it knows that you really like Luther Vandross. No, nothing for Luther Vandross. Jeez, tough crowd today. Good grief.
I'm not gonna lie. I kind of zoned out there.
Yeah, I don't even think that Alex knows who Luther Vandross is.
Oh no, he doesn't.
I mean, he was probably created while that music was playing, but yeah, he's probably never listened to it himself.
How did you know?
So anyway, I don't want to put you guys asleep, but really exciting. I mean, you could write an app and have these devices be controlled by your iPhone, and that's the one big thing at WWDC that we've never really talked about that has been rumored to be coming out, reported like by the Financial Times, I should say.
Yeah.
What, Buster? What are you going to say?
No, I was just going to say like we're expecting like a health book or, you know, iOS 8 and Mavericks, but that one, nobody's even mentioned that Apple could be doing something as big as that this year.
Yeah, this is the first time we've ever heard anything about it. Alex, anything to add on this topic? Do you think this is cool?
I mean, yeah, I think, I don't know. There's a lot of unknowns about it. Like, we don't really know much about it. It sounds like it's going to be like the made for iPhone program that they have for accessory makers and people that make, you know, AirPlay speakers and stuff like that. So yeah, I can see more stuff like the Philips Hue lights. And I mean, I hope there's some cooler stuff than that though. Like, I hope, I'm not really sure though. Like, I really haven't, beyond like the Nest stuff and a couple other things, I really haven't seen any like smart home tech that really appeals to me.
Like, I have the Hue lights and they're cool.
Oh, yeah?
Do those do, Buster? I've never played around with those.
You know, they're just light bulbs. They're LED light bulbs. They have multiple colors and you can just change them from your iPhone, turn them on and off.
So like a modern day lava lamp?
No, I mean, not really. Like, I never do it so it looks like a disco in my room, but you can like you can change from like a bright white light to like a soft yellow one, you know. And everything, you can set up like scenes based on pictures so it feels like you're at a sunset or a beach, but I never really do that.
I bet it's fun to play with when your peyote kicks in.
Oh, dude.
When your desert peyote kicks in.
Yes, drop some E and then you just go to, there's like apps that will like switch your Hue lights to like the beat of the song. And it's ridiculous.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's awesome. So I can see that. I would love a Nest, but they're expensive. And then I just bought a Lockatron. Actually,
yeah. I finally did,
but I still haven't been able to install it properly, or it doesn't.
That actually looks really cool. Where you can like share keys with people digitally.
Yeah, even stuff like that. I mean, you come home and like you walk by and like your door unlocks, your Hue lights goes on, and your Nest thermostat automatically switches down to 72.
Right?
That's
awesome.
The future. That's crazy.
That is the future. And Apple, I mean, it seems as though they're about to put their foot into that market. And everyone already carries an iPhone. So to have your iPhone be the central place to control all these devices is amazing.
Just if it was a super easy, clean way to control everything, I think that's kind of one of the hurdles, is because like introducing something like that to like my girlfriend or my parents, it's a little bit intimidating to them.
Yeah.
They have to find the apps and mess with the settings, you know? So I think Apple has like a lot of like could do some big damage there.
I'll tell you who had this whole internet-enabled house lockdown pat like 20 years ago, Bill Gates.
Yeah.
So Bill Gates lives in Medina, which is next to Seattle. It's across the water. It's one of the richest neighborhoods in the world. And this house is right on the water. And I heard that he has these Star Trek-type pendants that you can wear. And then you could program the pendant to control different aspects of the house. So when you walk into a room, the heat will go up or down, the lights will go up or down, the Luther Vandross sexy music will go up or down.
Did you ever see that movie Antitrust with Ryan Felipe?
As a huge Ryan Felipe fan, I'm embarrassed to say I actually don't know what you're talking about.
Oh my gosh, it was like they modeled like a whole house based on this kind of. It was like in Portland instead of Seattle,
really?
But like it was an evil CEO and you could walk around the house and he had these awesome LED screens that would like change to like your favorite like artworks and stuff
that
like that.
Sounds really cool.
Went through. Well, it was rad.
Doesn't Bill Gates' house have like an entire floor that's trampoline floors as well?
Really?
Yeah,
I don't know
I read that like in multiple places. It was a couple years ago. He's probably uninstalled it since then because he's gotten pretty old. But I don't know. Maybe his kids like it though. But I heard
he's
that he has
young
like
kids,
whole.
Yeah.
He has like whole rooms that the floor is bouncy.
That's awesome.
Wow.
I mean, why not? When you're the world's richest.
If
man.
You have that much money, why not? Why not do it?
Yeah. Why not?
Staff it with Oompa Loompas. Who cares?
I will say though, again, I'm embarrassed that I haven't seen that particular Ryan Phillippe.
Oh, Phillippe dude, movie. You should check it out.
I celebrate
good.
His whole catalog, so yeah. I'll have to go check
Cruel
that out.
Intentions and I don't know what the other
a classic film. Classic film. Let's talk about Touch ID. So I haven't actually had a ton of exposure to Touch ID. And that's unfortunate since I do an Apple podcast, but you know, an iPhone 5, it's good enough. Well, you know why upgrade to the newer phone when I didn't really think it was that drastically different. So apparently, according to Ming-Chi Kuo, KGI Securities analyst, the fingerprint sensor is going to be coming to all iOS devices, including the iPhone 6, the iPad Air 2, the iPad Mini 3, So I guess it would be the iPad Mini Retina 2. So if you haven't used it yet, it's going to be rolled out across all platforms, which I think is really awesome because Apple will be standardizing this technology across their devices, which probably means they have something big in mind for it. And we should also mention that Ming-Chi Kuo, correct me if I'm wrong here, Buster Alex, but yes, he's pretty accurate. I mean, he's one of the analysts that actually gets stuff right.
Ming-Chi Kuo, yes, he does.
Unlike Peter Misek.
Yeah, Peter Misek is ridiculous. He came out with, like, there was this report that he came out with today that he had seen a bunch of, like, prototype Apple products in China, including, like, a 4K TV and, like, a foldable iPhone and, like, just all kinds of crazy stuff that there's no way that, like, kind of weird stuff is outside of the design lab. But he's one of my favorite analysts of all time.
Breaking news, Apple just bought Beats.
Oh, did that just roll out?
Yeah.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Dun, 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 dun. Did it say for how much?
$3 billion.
Okay, so just like it was reported last night. All right, good for you, Dr. Dre.
Breaking
Dr. Drizzle.
News on the show.
Aw, yeah. Thanks for perusing the internet while you're doing the podcast, Alex.
That was me.
Nice. So we talked about that for the last couple shows. Turns out, 100% spot on. You guys think we're going to see the DRE at WWDC?
I think so, yeah.
Are they going to roll out a sign that says WWDRE? No, probably not.
Probably not.
Any other juicy tidbits?
Let's see. Well, Tim Cook has a quote here. He says that they like the business Beats already built. He's quote said that they could build anything you could dream of, but that's not the question. The thing that Beats provides us is a head start, and it provides us with incredible people, kindred spirits.
I gotta say, I mean, I've heard or I've read rumors that Apple sees this as a good brand to have because Beats is so culturally aware and such a cool brand, but it just seems like such a zany fit to me. The Apple culture with the Beats culture just seems, they don't seem to match. Do you guys see a good fit there?
I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how Jimmy Iovine and Dr. Dre mesh with the company. It doesn't seem, I mean, I don't know. I do think it's interesting. I don't know if they necessarily did need to buy it for a head start, like Tim Cook says in this. I think if Apple wanted to build like cool headphones like that, they could have done it on their own.
It seems like they could have done it on their own.
Same thing with like a streaming app. If they really wanted Beats for like its streaming app, they could have built iTunes Radio as a streaming app separately as well, you know?
Yeah, and from what I was reading recently, we've talked about all the reasons why Apple may or may not have wanted to buy Beats, but it seems to be that it really is just about the Beats headphone brand and how Beats actually has an in with all these really cool crowds, and they're really popular among young people and cool people, which is why I wear mine on my head every time I go to the mall.
Yeah, it's just crazy to think about what Dre is going to do at Apple. Like,
yeah, I know.
That's the one thing where I'm like, what?
Well, is he getting an official position there?
Yeah. He's going to be,
or is he going to just be like an advisor?
No, he's like going to work there.
He's not going to work at Cupertino every day. That's not what you're saying.
They're going to work under Eddie Q.
He's going to report directly to Eddie Q.
So he is going to be at Cupertino working at Apple on a regular basis.
But like in an interview with the New York Times, Cook says that they're really unique. It's like finding the precise grain of sand on the beach.
Why would you need a precise grain of sand from the beach?
And they're playing up the hires though, you know, and I find it hard to figure out what Dre is going to really do there, you know?
So you guys are just totally engulfed in reading this news.
Well, it's my job.
Yeah, no, for sure. Sorry. For sure. So Dre and Jimmy Iovine are going to be on site working at Apple, at least in some capacity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy. Yeah, it's hard to imagine Dre being on campus eating lunch
with Johnny.
I was imagining him walking around and like high-fiving everybody.
Yeah, like,
hell yeah.
What's up?
Hell yeah.
That's right. Thompson.
at the lunch counter ordering stuff, and they're like, "You want a roll, Mr. Dre?" Yeah, hell yeah, hell
yeah, a sushi roll.
Yeah, roll hell yeah. So, did it say how much money Dr. DRE got?
I don't know exactly. They're paying $3 billion for it, and he owns
I don't think he's gonna be the first billionaire.
20%. Yeah, he was only gonna make like be worth about $800 million after the deal's finalized, but I mean only. You know?
How long has Beats been a company since 2010?
And he's also gonna get tons of Apple stock options.
Oh my
gosh. So he's probably gonna be worth more than that in the future.
He's cashing
the first billionaire in hip hop. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on and talk a little bit.
There's this picture of Tim Cook and Dr. Dre standing together in Apple campus.
There is? Oh, my gosh. Man. I can't wait to read more about this. Great. Okay, well, let's move on, guys. Let's talk a little bit about Star Wars, then we're going to do an all-new faves and raves, and we'll wrap it up there. I wanted to bring up Star Wars because we're all, obviously, Star Wars fans. Buster, I know that you like the movies, and we got some new news recently that the Star Wars movie, I guess there's going to be a standalone Star Wars movie. This is not the one they're talking about releasing in 2015, I don't think.
No, it's 2016, right?
Is
the
it 2016?
Boba Fett one.
Oh, is
or
it really?
They said. I know they were talking about like doing like a Boba Fett one, a Yoda one.
They're going to blow out all these movies into their own franchises, I bet.
Disney, I kind of don't really want them to do all that, but...
Yeah, I'm not really that excited about it either. I don't want them to overdo it. Like, I don't think there needs to be a movie about that green troll-looking thing that works for Jabba the Hutt, you know?
Yeah.
He's going to get his own franchise. So, apparently, they picked a writer, Gary Whitta. Do you guys know who that is?
He did Godzilla.
Yeah. And actually, I follow this guy on Twitter, and he's really witty. Witty, get it? He's a tech nerd turned screenwriter, and he did Godzilla recently. Did you guys see that?
I didn't see it either.
I've seen it. It was pretty good.
Okay. I heard good things about it.
It was a pretty typical monster movie, but it was still pretty good.
And he also did the screenplay for After Earth. I'm sorry. He wrote the story for After Earth. Anyone see that?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, that was horrible.
You did see that movie?
Yeah, I did.
Wow.
I was like, Will Smith is coming back. Yeah. And then his son just ruined it for me.
Is that why the movie was bad? I've heard really bad things about it.
It was just the son, Jaden Smith. It was just a bad movie. It was dumb.
It was kind of a cool premise, though.
It was. I thought the premise was cool, and that's why I was disappointing, was I was kind of, you know, I had too high of expectations for it.
Yeah, it would be tough to do a movie like that with your son and have it not turn out great. Alex, did you see it?
Yeah, it was super.
Not your favorite.
Like, yeah, it was super.
But the good news is Book of Eli, he wrote the story for that. I don't know if you guys saw that. I love that movie. I thought it was a great movie. He also wrote the script for the Telltale Games game Walking Dead. Did you guys play that game?
Walking Dead?
Walking Dead iOS game?
Well, it's the same game on iOS as it is on Xbox.
I haven't played it, but it looks really good.
You guys, neither of you guys have played it?
No, not yet.
Probably one of the best games of 2013, I thought. So, really exciting news. We're inching closer to this movie, and... Lukewarm?
If the Godzilla movie was just like, meh, and I've heard stuff about it, and I haven't seen it, but I was like, I feel like I can skip it. And the same thing with After Earth. I don't know. I'm not too optimistic about it, to be honest.
Okay, Alex, what do you think?
I'm not super familiar with the guy, but it sounds like he's done. I mean, some cool stuff. Like, and I trust J.J. Abrams too. So
J.J. Abrams is amazing, isn't he?
He's made
so many great movies. I think he's kind of like our generation's Steven Spielberg. Is that going too far?
J.J. Abrams?
Yeah.
I think that's not going too far. I think that's fair. I mean, he hasn't made as many movies. He's more like TV than Spielberg, I feel.
Yeah, but
like.
He's made some great TV shows.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
I mean, Alias. He was involved.
Lost,
of course. He did, I was going to say, that is it 8mm, that movie that came out recently.
8 mil. Oh yeah, that one was okay. Yeah,
that was not the greatest one. And then he also did Star Trek, which I thought was incredible. So I have high hopes in that regard as well. I think if anything, he'll bring magic to it. Okay, guys, let's wrap up with an all new faves and raves and faves and raves and
faves.
Faves. This is a segment where we pitch our favorite tech and apps and then vote on which one's best. I got a pretty cool one. It's not exactly new, but I've been enjoying it quite a lot. Buster, you got something picked?
Yeah, I do. I have something.
Did you literally just pick it now?
I just picked this off of my desk, but it's going to be a winner.
Okay. Alex, you got something?
Yeah, I guess I have something. I'll pull something.
I know
out
you were saying
hat.
Earlier you were just going to not choose anything, but judge us. Sit there and judge. But it'll be good if you participate. I'll go first. You guys are going to laugh at me. I chose an app. It's called 2048.
Oh, come on. You can't do that.
Why not?
I hate that app because I really like threes. And
I've never played threes. I've never played threes.
See, that's why I hate 2048.
Wait, was threes? Did threes come out before 2048?
Yeah. And
it did.
It's a lot nicer. It's a paid app, though, is the problem. So.
What, 2048 is or threes?
Threes is.
Oh, yeah, and threes is nicer than 2048?
Yeah. Okay. Sorry to hate on your pick already.
That's all right. That's cool. I haven't played threes, but it's funny because every time I mention 2048, people bring up threes.
Yeah.
So 2048, free game on the App Store. Really super fun, simple premise. You have a board with a certain amount of spaces in it, and these tiles keep appearing, and you have to slam the tiles with the like numbers into each other. So if you get a 4, you want to slam into another 4, and then those two tiles turn into one tile, which is 8. So it's kind of like a game of exponentials, and every time you slam these things together, it creates a larger tile with a higher number. And the goal of the game is to create one tile called 2048. It's really super difficult to get there. I think the highest I've gotten is 512. And, you know, my IQ is like 170, so you'd be hard-pressed to beat that. You could try. I think they just added a multiplayer mode recently that I haven't tried yet. So I should give that a shot. But really, really fun game, addictive, and really simple. You can kind of hop in and out of it. You don't really need to understand any rules. Once you figure it out, you can just kind of play it whenever you want. That's my pick, 2048. Buster, Alex, who wants to go next?
I'll go next. All right, seems like you did an app. I'll do an app too. This one is called Sky Guide. It's probably been on a ton of, or at least one Apple commercial.
Oh.
And it's just one of those guides where you can look at and see like all the constellations and everything. It's a little like augmented reality. You point your phone at the sky and it'll tell you, you know, constellations, and you can tap on stars to get more information about like when they're going to die and stuff like that. But
sad.
It's one of my favorite apps to like, it's one of the main reasons I bring my iPhone with me on like campouts and stuff like that. Like when you can really see the stars, it's pretty awesome. Like just like having like an astronomy lesson in your pocket or going to the planetarium. So it works even when you don't have cell phone service, and it can still like position the stars for you.
Oh, that's cool.
Like that. So that's
I
my
like
pick.
That. I mean, you can't see the stars out here, but
yeah,
I guess if you live in Arizona, that'd be useful.
You can't ever see the stars?
No, man.
Jeez, that sucks.
It's really bright. I mean, there's city sprawl everywhere, but then it's overcast all the time.
Ah,
so you can never see the sky. Okay. Alex, what's your pick?
My pick is an app that might get me in trouble called Popcorn Time.
Popcorn Time, okay.
I swear like you picked it. This before.
Yeah, I think so. We've at least talked about it
yeah.
before.
Yeah, anyway, go ahead.
Well, I'm picking it because I used it to watch I will not say either legal or illegal piece of material yesterday. Okay. And I cannot confirm or deny that they recently added TV show support.
Okay.
So if you are, you know, say there's a show that you don't really have access to because you don't pay the ridiculous fee it requires to access said show, but you'd still like to watch it the day after it comes out in a Netflix-like environment in HD with subtitles.
The whole shebang.
this app might be the way to go.
Well, tell me, I've never used the popcorn app. Funny enough, I used to have a popcorn player in college. How does the app work? Is it kind of like a peer-to-peer type?
It's over BitTorrent, so you're seeding the video to others while you're downloading it.
So it's literally just a torrent app on your iPhone that streams.
It's not on iPhone, it's on the Mac.
Oh, it's on the Mac.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So you're doing a Mac app.
Yeah, it's important a Mac app, and you seed it out as you download it. So instead of having to download something completely before you watch it, you can kind of like Netflix like stream it.
Gotcha. Okay. And how much is it?
Free, of course.
Oh, free. Wouldn't that be funny if they charged for it, this app that
helps $70 a month
watch content? Maybe Comcast will buy them, and then it'll be like $25 a month. For Popcorn Hour, stream all the shows you want for one low price. Okay, who wants to vote first?
I'll vote first.
Okay, Buster. Pick mine. I know you want to.
You know, I really don't want to do this.
Is it because you are such a Threes fan?
Yeah, it is.
But have you played 2048, and have you found it enjoyable?
I have found it enjoyable. It's just such a horrible ripoff. I can't support it. So Alex gets my vote. I got to do it.
That's not my fault, though. I mean, you would think that Threes would create a free app supported by ads.
Yeah, true. Gosh, sorry. Okay. Sorry I had to do
that. That's okay. I hate
you. Gotta stay loyal.
Alex, what do you think?
I'm going to vote for Busters.
Why? You can't see stars where you live.
Yeah, I can see so many stars. I just saw the meteor shower a couple of days ago, bruh.
Was it on the popcorn app, or were you actually outside?
I was actually outside.
I thought it was overcast there a lot.
You're overcast a lot.
Well, I mean, I am cloudy and dark and handsome. That's true. But, well, the heck. So which one am I going to vote for? Well... Alex, I gotta say, I'm gonna go with Busters.
Yes! Hallelujah, I win again.
Because I actually love stargazing, and I can never do it. And when I was in middle school, I used to do it as often as I could. We used to lay on this big trampoline, you know, the whole gang, and just watch stars fly over. Play some Luther Vandross.
I don't even care, Irfan.
Don't be hurt! Come on, Alex! Show me those pearly whites. All right. Well, hey, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. This show went off the rails about 25 minutes ago anyway. Hey, if you guys want to vote on your favorite pick, head on over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheCultCast, and let us know which one you think is best. And before we roll out, as we do, if you guys want to hop over to podsurvey.com/cult, that would be a great help to us. We're doing a survey right now. You guys have probably heard me talk about it. And it takes about 5 minutes of your time. It really helps us select the best kind of sponsors to take on for our show. We want to make sure that we're talking about things that actually interest you guys. Head on over to podsurvey.com/cult. Hop on and do the survey for us. We would be greatly appreciative. All right, guys, that's all the cult cast we have for you guys this week. Be sure to stick around for cult cast second hour. That's all you gotta do is just let the audio keep playing. This has been the cult cast, the best 30-minute album conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of the cult cast come out every Thursday night. Hey, if you want to follow us on Twitter, I'm at Airfon. Alex is Alex E. Heath. Buster is BST3R. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys next time.
I was going to give you some, like, falsetto there.
That was really falsetto.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for that falsetto. It was all over the place. You're like a Justin Timberlake type character.
I am.
You should have been the fifth Backstreet Boy. Okay, you ready?
Yes.
Hey guys, welcome to CultCast Second Hour. I'm Irfan Elijah, your host. You guys know me. And it's been far too long since we've done this segment, but we're going to be trying to bring more of these second hour conversations to you. And I have a great guest today. His name is Jonathan Mann. M-A-N-N. Hey, Jonathan.
Hello.
I want to call you Jonathan Mon.
Like Thomas Mon.
I don't know who Thomas Mon is. Who is that?
He's a famous writer.
Oh, he is? Okay.
I believe Germany in the, I don't know. I don't
I was
know when.
Thinking Hans and Franz from SNL.
Oh, yeah. Hans and Franz. Okay, yeah, that's
yours
that's
is probably good. Much cooler. Jonathan is, he has an interesting story. So he is a YouTuber, which in and of itself is fascinating. And we'll talk about why that fascinates me so much later in the show. But in 2000, was it 2009 or 2010, Jonathan? One of the
2009,
songs. 2009,
yeah.
2009 was referenced by Steve Jobs in his AntennaGate keynote that he did, where he was talking about how the whole thing is basically BS and everyone's blowing it out of proportion. And he's like, yeah, and some guy even made a song on it. And that was your song, right?
That was my song. That's very true. Yeah.
And so you made this AntennaGate song on YouTube to basically, I listened to it several times. And if I understand the gist, it was just the whole thing is stupid. Why are we even talking about this?
Yeah.
And that was the whole point of the song.
Well, I knew that Apple was having their press. It was like the day, it was literally the night before their press conference. And I knew that they were having that, and so I just thought, you know, I'll strike while the iron's hot, you know, give my 2 cents on the subject, and I'll make this video, and and you know, and then they called me the next morning. Literally, like, I went to bed and I woke up the next morning and to several emails and a phone call from Apple PR asking me if they could use the video to open the press conference.
Oh, they actually used it in the press conference.
They opened the press conference with the video, yeah.
And how did that make you feel?
Yeah, it made me feel great. Steve Jobs played my video and then said, we found that on YouTube this morning, couldn't help but want to share it. So
yeah, well, the message was pretty much right up his alley, right? I mean,
yeah,
I'm totally in line with the way you felt. I thought it was not really a big issue and everyone kept blowing out of proportion.
You know, I asked myself a lot, you know, in the days and then weeks and months and now years after that, like what, like how, like why did he decide to use it? Like what it seemed so out of character for him in a way, mm-hmm. right? You know, like here's Steve Jobs, everything is so tightly controlled and his messaging is always very, you know, specific and nothing is out of place. And why is he using just some schmo from the internet's video to like to open this like press conference?
Uh-huh.
And you know, there's two conclusions that I sort of came to. The first is that I feel like to a certain extent he was just so kind of fed up with it, and it was just like, it was kind of like a fuck you. It was like, this is how little I care about this whole thing.
Yeah.
Here, I'm just gonna let this dude in his bedroom just like explain it for you.
This guy is just as mad about it as I am. So yeah. Here, just listen to this.
Just listen to this, you know? And then actually though, recently the head of Apple's internal PR department left the company.
Katie
Cotton.
Yeah, we just talked about her on the show.
Yeah, and if there's a really great interview with her on, I believe it's 99U, that website.
Mm-hmm.
They had a conference and they had her on, and she gives this really great interview, and she talks about Steve Jobs, you know, coming home from Hawaii to deal with, he was on a vacation in Hawaii and he came back to deal with this AntennaGate thing.
Mm-hmm.
And how emotional he was, sort of leading up towards this press conference. She talks about, you can go watch this video. Maybe I'll send it to you. And you can put it in the show notes. Like, she talks about him like sitting in the boardroom or whatever, and they were talking about what to do, and he was like sobbing and like banging on the table and saying, like, this
wow.
is not Apple. Like, this is not what we do. Like, this is unacceptable. Once I saw that, I sort of got a totally different feeling about why he might have resonated with the video or used the video. It was like, oh my God, you know, here's a song that completely maybe distilled the way that he felt, the emotions that he felt towards it, and just sort of like I think it hit all the right notes for him. And of course, he was such a fan of music.
So
to me, hearing that, I was like, oh, maybe the song resonated with him in a whole different way, you know, than I thought. Maybe it wasn't so much of a fuck you to the press as it was he was so hurt by the whole thing that he was that the song resonated with him. It sort of resonated with that hurt that he was feeling.
That's really interesting. I never would have guessed that he was that upset about it.
No, I mean, I know.
To me, he just kind of seemed, you know, irreverent of the whole thing. I mean,
and
just
yeah,
like,
nonchalant.
This is stupid. You guys are blowing this out of proportion. Here, look. All these other phones do the exact same thing when you hold them in a similar way. And you drop like one bar. Who cares? Everyone go home.
Yeah, exactly. No, I know. But yeah, you hear her tell that story. It's really fascinating, you know?
And she was really close to him. I know she was like one of his confidants and had been there for, I think, 17 or 18 years.
Forever.
Knew him quite well.
Yeah.
Man, I would love to get her on the show, but that's neither here nor there.
Indeed.
So I wanted to lead with that because that was kind of the connection to the Apple world. And but I think there's a story before you got to that point that I found to be really interesting, and that is your YouTube story.
Yeah.
You've been on YouTube, you said, for 9 or 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, YouTube started in 2005, and I started doing YouTube late 2005, sort of 2006.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of drew you to making videos? Because I remember when YouTube was new, and it was this place where you went and watched like funny videos, goats kicking people, that type of thing. And
I mean, it still is to a certain extent, right? I mean,
yeah, it is.
It still has that sort of roots to it. But, you know, it's funny because I was doing a lot of video game based work back then. I was writing songs about video games, and I had this character called Game Jew, which went around and sang songs about video games and reviewed them and talked about them. But that sort of arose out of there was a show on YouTube very, very, very early on called Game Life.
Mm-hmm.
And it was these three kids and they just made their own show about video games. And it was really dumb. It was sort of even sort of like Tom Green-esque, I guess, maybe. But the other thing about it, there was something kind of weird about it because one of the kids seemed to have some kind of maybe like mental disability or something. So there was like you would watch it and it was like you would laugh at it, but you'd sort of feel bad for laughing at it. And it sort of had that aspect of it. But it actually got picked up by MTV briefly.
Wow.
There was like they went from making videos online to, you know, in the middle 2000s, they had a show based on that on MTV. And like, funny enough, like, I remember just seeing that and that was what really inspired me to start making YouTube videos. I was like, well, that's interesting. If they can do it, I can do it. And I had made this rock opera based on the Super Mario Brothers that I was performing. I was living in LA at the time. And that was sort of, it was going pretty well, but, you know, we were running into legal troubles with Nintendo. And so I just decided to sort of don the costume and call myself Game Jew, just as Mario. And that was the start of it. And that went really great. I mean, I did lots of different things back then as Game Jew. And the biggest thing I did as Game Jew is I wrote and sang a song in person to Shigeru Miyamoto, the guy who made Mario and Donkey Kong, Zelda.
So you met him, wrote the song right there, and then sang it? Or
no, I had this song that I had written for him because I was such a fan. And I made it my goal to like track him down and sing him this song. And that was like sort of the point of the video. And so I did that. And so Game Jew had like a sort of pretty loyal following on YouTube, and I was doing that for a while. And then as my sort of interest in doing solely video game themed stuff waned, I started doing other kind of videos, and then eventually I hit on the idea of Song a Day, and I've been doing that ever since.
So this is incredible. So you've been doing Song a Day for how long now? How many years?
For 5.5 years. I'm my 2000th song is happening next month in mid-June.
Wow. And yes, so you guys heard that correct. I was surprised by this too. So you've been writing and performing a song on YouTube every single day since 5.5 years ago.
Yeah, 2009. I started January 1st, 2009. Yep.
And have you missed a day?
I have not missed a day yet. No.
That's remarkable. I mean, just the tenacity to make a song every day and then, you know, write the lyrics and everything. That's one thing. And then to record the whole thing and upload it and edit it to YouTube is really incredible. And so when you had already, when you had been doing that, how many songs in were you by the time you did the Antenna Gate thing? That was like one of your song a day songs, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah. I think it was 560 something.
Okay. So you're about 2 years in at that point.
Yep.
And how long did it take? Was that your first big,
I guess the way that I measure it, it's funny because, you know, viral videos, there's like a couple different kinds. They're the kinds that sort of only go big. They're the kinds that sort of only go big on the internet. They're the kinds that like, there's a kind of like get lots of views, but doesn't really get a lot of other kind of stuff. Like it doesn't draw a lot of attention. And then there are things that you do that like get a lot of views and sort of you get this weird deluge of attention. And by that metric, the Apple Antenna Gate song was, I would say like the third really big one.
Oh,
that,
wow.
That had happened.
Because that one got what? 1.3 million views.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's your third biggest. What's your biggest?
It was not the third biggest. It was the third one that had happened.
Okay, gotcha.
Chronologically, not numbers wise.
What was your first one?
The first one was a song about Paul Krugman that I did. It was number 77, and on that I ended up on like the Rachel Maddow show singing it live, and what else happened? I mean, that was like that one was really huge. I wrote this song about Paul Krugman, and it was just all over the place.
Forgive me. Who's Paul Krugman?
Oh, Paul Krugman is a Nobel Prize winning economist who writes for the New York Times.
Perfect songwriting subject. Was it a love song? Was it a song about macroeconomics?
It was a song. Yeah, it was a song begging him to be Treasury Secretary rather than Tim Geithner. That was basically the gist of it.
No wonder you landed on Rachel Maddow. That's hilarious.
The second big one actually was, funny enough, I was making my living doing video contests for a while there in the middle of maybe my first and second years of Song a Day. I made my living primarily doing video contests online. I would enter 14 of them and win two or three, and then that would sort of sustain me. And so I entered a Microsoft Bing search engine jingle contest to make the funniest Bing jingle and video and won it.
Wow.
With the Bing jingle. And my prize was a $500 American Express gift card. But TechCrunch picked it up and called it the worst jingle ever, which like led to a whole other round of huge, you know, it was everywhere for a week after TechCrunch featured it. And then funny enough, you know, that TechCrunch posting it was sort of how was pretty much guaranteed how Steve Jobs ended up even seeing the Antenna Gate song in the first place, because after TechCrunch covered that, the Bing jingle, we sort of struck up a relationship and I would do tech themed songs and they would feature them. And so when I did the Apple one, they featured it right away. And I'm pretty sure that's how it came to Steve's attention.
Wow. That's a great story. I mean, you said you're making your living doing this. How does somebody make a living writing songs for free and putting them on YouTube?
Well, YouTube is really more, you know, there's ad revenue, which doesn't really equal that much, but YouTube is really more like a like an advertising platform for me. Mm-hmm. It sort of shows that, hey, this is what I do and this is what I can do. So I do a lot of like corporate work, and a lot of a big way of how I make my living is doing songs for conferences. I'll go to a conference and cover it basically in song.
Okay.
I'll watch what happens and I'll sort of just recap everything that happened beginning to end in a sort of, you know, 5 minute song. Or, you know, I do a lot of podcasts. I get hired for a lot of podcast jingles and things like that.
Aha. I was like, uh-oh, you know we're not paying you, right?
Yeah. And
you're not going to send me an invoice after this, are you?
No. Yeah, it's more just like, in fact, I just did one for, I don't know if they're actually going to run with it or not. I did one for Squarespace. You know, Squarespace sort of, they fund a lot of different podcasts.
Oh, yeah, they sponsor our podcast.
So I did a jingle for them that they're going to be using as a instead of an ad read, they're going to play this jingle that I did for them.
That's awesome.
So things like that, you know, just and it's sort of a lot of it often comes out of Song of Day. People see me online, they see the ones that go big, and they want to, you know, they want to do something with it. That's basically where the majority of my income comes from.
That's incredible. I mean, the fact that you can do that and build a name for yourself and turn it into a viable business is really, really cool.
It is. I mean, it's a, you know, it's a real sort of sort of sign of our times story, I guess.
I don't think people realize how vibrant the community is on YouTube either. I think a lot of older people especially just think of YouTube as this place where you go to watch, you know, cat videos. And that's true. But it has such an amazing community, and I think for people that are like 16 and younger, they really get it because that's how they consume most of their video.
Oh, the vast majority, and you know, you'd be, I mean, I'm pretty plugged in to the community, but you can be as plugged in as anybody, and every single day discover somebody new that has an audience that is just absolutely gargantuan. That you've never heard of, you know. So
yeah, I know what you mean.
It's really weird. You just come across somebody, and you're like, "Who is this person?" And they just have millions upon millions of followers, and you know, it really is that 16 and under crowd. And they, to them, it's just the way that it is. You know, they don't really know any different, and that's.
Oh, Jonathan, I'm losing you. I'm losing your audio. Hello? Hello?
Hello?
You're cutting out pretty bad. Do you have anything in the background uploading or downloading? Hello? Hello? Hello?
Let's see if I can plug in direct here.
Are you trying your Ethernet?
This might help. Yeah. Oh yeah, I can hear the quality went way down.
Yeah, and it was cutting out.
Is that any better?
Let me try calling you back real fast. We'll reset the connection.
How's that?
Oh my goodness. I can hear your voice again.
Oh, sweet.
Good. Are you on Ethernet now?
I believe so. Yeah, my computer, I have like the new MacBook Pro and it doesn't have Ethernet, but I have a Thunderbolt thing, so hopefully it's working.
Yeah, I had the new MacBook Pro as well. And that was one of the major bummers for me is the fact that you gave up an Ethernet port and a FireWire port, things that I actually currently still use for these Thunderbolt ports. And you got to buy a bunch of adapters to make everything work.
And then you have to not lose them, which is the most important thing.
That's crucial when you're trying to use them. I think I started losing you where you were talking about all these artists that are on YouTube that you find out have like 2 million followers you never heard of before. Do you remember what you were saying?
Yeah, I was just saying that you can just be going around about your business online and come across somebody that. Just like some random person that you've never heard of before, and their audience is just absolutely huge, and you're like, where are these people coming from? But like you said, the 16 and under crowd, like it's just totally natural for them to do all of their media watching on YouTube. That's like, as you know, I don't know if you've if you know anything about the Minecraft stuff that happens. But
I was just gonna bring that up.
Yeah, but it's like that's a whole other that's like a whole subset. But that it is just every time I hear anything about it, it is unbelievable how big that community is.
Yes, Minecraft and YouTube for 16 and under are like the two huge things. I'm like, I have yet to meet a 15, 14, 13-year-old who isn't really into both.
Yep.
That's incredible.
And you know, there are musicians who write solely Minecraft-based songs and do quite well, you know, because these kids, they're literally playing Minecraft. They're watching videos about Minecraft while listening to songs about Minecraft all at the same time.
And they're making a living on it.
Oh yeah, and I think I remember, I don't know if you listened to Gruber's podcast, but like I remember him mentioning his son, John Gruber of Daring Fireball, his son doing that. You know, like that's all it is all the time. Just like he's got his laptop open, he's using his other computer, he's multitasking. It's all Minecraft though. It's like constant Minecraft barrage.
That's hilarious. I knew Minecraft was really huge, but I didn't realize it was like YouTube style large.
I mean, I think that right now most of the like top YouTubers are like devoted to Minecraft, basically.
Wow, yeah. That's really remarkable. I heard it was comedy, video games were the top videos on YouTube, and then there's something else that I can't remember.
I mean, you know, comedy's always been really huge, yeah.
And it's really on YouTube, especially has created some really amazing shows on network television or on cable television. Have you ever watched Workaholics?
I never actually have seen that.
Oh my gosh. One of the best shows on television. So funny. And those guys started as a trio on YouTube.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
And you can still go watch their YouTube videos. And they were doing it they were using camcorders that actually took film, you know, I think.
Right.
Like they were doing it a while ago and then they got so popular that I think Comedy Central offered them a show and they're on season 3 or 4 now and it's freaking hilarious. If you
that's great. Yeah,
you should check it out. I think some of it's on Netflix or Amazon Instant Video or something. Can I ask you about your breakup song that you did?
Yes.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Let me just set it up. So yeah. I was looking through your YouTube videos. By the way, we should mention this at the very top. The Rock Bottom Cookie. YouTube.com. The Rock Cookie Bottom. Sorry. youtube.com/therockcookiebottom if you want to check out any of Jonathan's like 25,000 videos that you have up there.
Yeah, essentially.
I was watching this video and I saw like this kind of melancholy song and I realized about 10 seconds, 20 seconds into it that this was actually a real breakup song and you had your girlfriend in the video with you singing this song and you guys were doing coordinated dance moves together.
Yeah.
And I thought, that would be hard because you guys were together for 5 years and then you decided to break up. And I'm sure you had done videos together before that point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
And so your YouTube channel probably was familiar with both of you doing videos together and you were kind of like ending this era and you decided to do a video about your breakup with this person that you're breaking up with. Whose idea was that? And how was it, you know, creating that video?
It was my idea, and there were points where it was a little hard, but we had a good time with it. And you know, the main purpose actually of that video was that I would watch people, friends, sort of break up via Facebook. You know, you would see people, and they would just kind of either they would make a big long post about it, and it would be very weepy, and everybody would sort of be a big sob fest or whatever, which is understandable. And or someone would just like go on and be like change their relationship status.
Yeah, that's usually what I see.
And then suddenly,
very
covert
mode.
Like, it's just like they're not together anymore. And then like it's just like, oh man.
And you're like not sure if you should say anything. Are you guys together anymore? Because your status changed, but awkward, you know, like no one said anything. Yeah.
So and then there's the other thing where if you don't do that and then like you see your friends and they ask you how your significant other is doing and you're like, oh, we broke up, and they're like, oh, and then they feel awkward and you feel awkward. And,
didn't you see my Facebook status?
You have to explain it. And so it's just like let's just bypass all of that and we'll just make a song about it and we'll just like tell everyone not to feel awkward, and we'll just make a song about it, and it'll just be what it is, and we'll post it, and you know, and that'll be that. And so we did that, and
that was like 2 or 3 years ago, right?
Yeah, it was 2012.
Okay, because I know you have a child now. Congratulations! I said that before the show, but congratulations again. And are you also married now?
I am.
Okay,
yeah.
so
it all worked out.
Not the same person. Or did you end up making a "We Got Back Together" video and song?
No.
Did you make a video about your son, daughter?
Son, yeah. I've made several videos so far.
I just saw the one with you holding him, complaining that someone had stole your credit card and charged $5,000 on it.
That happened. Yeah, that definitely happened. Still waiting to get that money back.
Yeah, well, you know, don't hold your breath.
Next time.
Well, that leads me into kind of the final thing I wanted to talk about with you, and that is, I'm a music guy. Mm-hmm. For a long time, I really wanted to be a musician, and I wasn't, you know, junior high and high school, I played like band instruments, you know, like woodwind instruments and stuff.
Sure.
Always wanted to play the saxophone.
Okay.
I've even tried writing songs several times, and it's really kind of been a difficult process for me.
Oh, okay.
And I think that it's more just because you don't want to write something that sucks. And I think that this kind of affects all areas of my life. Even when I'm creating the show, I'm like, I really want to put together the best show that I can. I have a vision for it usually, and I'm trying to make it as good as I can. And it's easy to get discouraged. It's easy to make something that you don't want to put out there. And then here you are, you're making all this content every single day. How do you get inspired to write a good song? How do you write a song even on the days when you don't want to? And, you know, how do you keep at it for so long? Because, I mean, for 5.5 years to do one song every day, it's a lot of work.
So the secret to making a good song is to not try to make a good song. Because as soon as you are putting pressure on yourself that you need to make something really good right now, you've already put so many barriers between you and actually making something that the chances that it's going to happen, the chances that you'd make something good have gone way down. So if you're sitting down to write a song and you don't put any pressure, I'm just going to write a song. It might not be a great song. It might even be a shitty song, but you're just going to you're going to see what happens. When you do that, the chances that you're actually going to make something good. And this happens every single day. This happens all the time to me where it's like, if I just don't try, it's really counterintuitive. It's like, if you don't try to make something good might happen.
No, I totally get what you're saying. And, sometimes I feel like when I'm able to be the most creative is when I just don't care.
Yes.
I don't care what happens, and whatever happens will happen. It's just like jokes. It's just like anything else. I mean, when you care too much, I think it kind of puts you in a fear mode when you really just don't want to do anything because you're worried that what you're going to produce is not going to be, it's not going to meet your standards.
I mean, in my mind, the way I think about it, I think that fear is the main, you know, is the main thing that you have to overcome.
I agree. I definitely agree. And, I also think that, and this is especially true on our show for people that listen to it. I mean, the best stuff that we've done is stuff that was just totally off the cuff.
Yeah.
We didn't care what we were doing, and it evolved into something great. And a recent example is we did this segment called Get to Know Your Cultist, where our listeners give us questions that we answer about ourselves or other topics, but usually about, you know, what we would want to do with our lives or our favorite foods, that type of thing. And one of our co-hosts, Leander Caney, who I think is just hilarious, the question was, what would be your perfect job? And so we do this segment during the show, and he describes being a journalist, which is what he is, and how it's great and all this. And then we are like, we stop the show, the show's over. And then he goes on. And he's like, actually, you know what? I should have thought more about that. He's like, I really want to be an ice cream man. And he was dead serious. And he starts going into how he loves, he would love to drive around the neighborhood and give kids ice cream. And Leander is like the nicest, kindest guy. And he was being very genuine. It was a very authentic moment. And I was dying laughing because it turned into this whole comedy bit where it's like, you know, here's this British guy with rotten teeth driving around in this old ice cream truck, and he's like, doesn't really have all the ice cream that you want, but if you offer him a dollar, he'll take it no matter what and just not give you your ice cream. Anyway, it was hilarious, and I was listening to this thing, and I was like, this is probably my favorite cult cast bit that we have ever done, and it was totally impromptu. I mean, it was just like, it was like Anchorman.
It was a joke.
It was improvisational.
It was literally just a joke.
Yeah.
I mean, you hear, if you listen and you read a lot of interviews with musicians, especially musicians, I feel like have this that happens. It's always the moments when they are not trying. It's always the moments where they're just kind of goofing off. They're just sort of fucking around, if I can say that.
Like, well, you've said it like three or four times, so yeah, you're fine.
That something amazing happens out of it, you know? There's no pressure, and they just sort of do it. And I try to, so what Song of Day is for me a lot is just sort of trying to cultivate that on an everyday basis, you know, to cultivate that space where I really, you know, I just give myself space to just kind of goof off and not really care about making something amazing. Mm-hmm. More often than not, I'm really surprised with the results.
I've heard that sentiment echoed so many different places. I saw a documentary on South Park, and it was, I don't know if you saw the same documentary.
I haven't seen it yet. I think I've heard a lot.
It was just like Trey and Matt talking about the creative process and how difficult it is. And eventually, like, you just have to put out something because you have a deadline. You have to put something out. Right. And I also heard Fred Armisen, formerly of SNL, he was on a podcast lately talking about his creative process. Mm-hmm. And I think he's hilarious. He puts out a lot of great stuff. And he said essentially the same thing. He was like, you know, you got to just go in there and not care if it's funny.
Right.
You just got to do whatever you want. And if it turns into something funny, great. And if it's something different than what you expected, you have to be okay with that. That's something I have to remind myself of.
It's very important. Yeah, it's huge.
How do you normally feel once a song is done? And well, first, how long does the process take you? And then second, once you've birthed this thing, this new creation, mm-hmm. what's the feeling you normally have about it?
Well, the amount of time that it takes really varies on a day-to-day level. I would say, like, if you averaged every day out, it would probably be something like 4 hours, but that's including days that take 18 hours and days that take 10 minutes. So it really, really varies. And then the feeling that I get, I would say overall, you know, just having created something today, you know, is a feeling that I really enjoy, mm-hmm. regardless of sort of what it is. Just knowing that I've made something today, on a sort of base level, there's that. And then on days when I make something that I sort of don't really like, you know, it's just like, oh, that didn't come out very good.
But you still are going to put it out there anyway.
Oh yeah, and then on days when I made something good, I'm like, wow, that was awesome, you know, And very often, even the songs that I make that I put out that I think are complete crap or something, you know, my audience, and they'll tell me when they don't like something. They're not mm-hmm. afraid to tell me the truth. There's always somebody. There's always like a few people that were like, hey, I really liked this one. You know, this one really resonated with me or whatever. So, so you know, on a base level, I think doing Song a Day sort of makes me happier than if I wasn't doing it.
Do you ever get the feeling that you're going to put out a song and it's going to be, you're like, I got to put out something today and this is what I made and I'm not happy with it. And this is going to be so bad that everyone on my channel is going to unsubscribe. Because honestly, I feel that way about the podcast sometimes. Oh, I mean, we put out one episode a week and I don't have as many chances as you get. And some of the episodes I'm like, this is great. It meets my standards. And then some days I'm like, this conversation is not good. You know, I wish we could redo the entire episode, but we have a deadline. We have to put this out.
Well, here's the thing about both podcasting and any kind of relationship that you form with an audience over the internet is that more often than not, the relationship is with you, not with what you're making. Mm-hmm. So your audience I think I speak for myself is like my core audience, on a day-to-day level, they like the song, they don't like the song, they're okay with the song, they hate the song, whatever. Mm-hmm. They're just, they're there for me to sort of watch my process and just sort of like experience, you know, my day or my life through my music. And mm-hmm. I imagine it's similar. I know with the podcasts that I listen to, if, you know, it doesn't really matter often what they're talking about, even if I'm not sort of super interested in, you know, the Accidental Tech Podcast is like my favorite podcast, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm not I don't code. I don't know anything. I don't know I don't know anything about coding anything. So when they go off on their tangents about coding and stuff, I kind of tune out a little bit. But I'm not going to stop listening because I'm kind of bored by the conversation. I enjoy hearing those three guys just kind of shoot the shit. And I'm in it for them. I'm not necessarily in it for like, this show is amazing or this show sucks, you know?
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah, I've had podcasts that I've listened to too, and they're personality driven, as you said.
That's the thing. Yeah,
and
exactly.
I just want to hear these guys talk about whatever they're going to talk about, and I'll listen. And sometimes one of my favorite podcasts, which is no longer being made, was called The Totally Rad Show. Mm-hmm. And they would talk about video games. They would talk about television and movies. And then they would also talk about comic books sometimes. And I don't read comic books. I'm not really that interested in them.
Right.
And so I would just not listen to those specific segments.
Yeah, right.
But I would still, you know, be eager to listen to the shows when they were talking about things that actually interested me. And that was actually for our podcast. I mean, that was one of the things that I really was excited about, because just the relationships I had with these guys, I was like, this is so much, I'm having so much fun doing this. Like, we should record this and release it, and maybe other people will have fun too.
Right, exactly.
And I think that's how it works.
I think that's how so many podcasts get started, you know?
Yeah, I think you're true. And that's like the whole thing about Saturday Night Live and why their stuff works, I think, too.
That's true.
Well, I think that's all I got. Thanks for joining me for this second hour episode. I had a really good time, and maybe we could join up again sometime, talk more about some other topics.
I'd love that.
But for the meantime, where could people find you? I know you're on YouTube, The Rock Cookie Bottom.
Yeah.
And you're also on Twitter, Song A Day Man. That's with two N's, MANN. Because his name is Jonathan Mann. Get it?
That's how it works.
Anywhere else that you want to plug or anything else?
Yeah, I have a new album out of animal themed songs. So if you go to animals.cool. I went ahead.
Is that a legitimate website now?
.cool? And I got one of those newfangled URLs, .cool. So animals.cool, no kidding. You can go there and download my new album.
Oh my gosh. I think I'm going to get a new domain name with .cool at the end. How do you even get those?
I use Hover.
Oh man. I love Hover. Really? Yep. And how much is a .cool domain?
I think it was like $30.
Wow. Well worth it, I think.
Well worth it. Not, you know, yeah, not so bad.
I love it. I didn't even know that was a real domain. Okay, great. Well, I'm Irfan Elijah. This has been CultCast Second Hour with Jonathan Mann. And we hope to bring you more second hour conversations like this in the near-ish future. But if you stayed tuned to the very end, thank you. And we'll see you guys next time.